From the county, from another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know.
Give me a hand.
What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What?
Come on. Get in that cell.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now, here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. This is our weekly radio show heard globally all around the world. And I want to thank you, and I got two of my best friends, two warriors who's on the front line for the last 40 years or so, working in the vineyards and on the front line. We'll get to them shortly. We've been joined by our distinguished co-host, Nkechi Taifa. I don't know how we catch up with you. She's always on the go. As we open up the show, we always start with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. Good morning. New York declares prison strike over and will fire 2,000 correctional officers. More than 6,500 National Guards are on duty amid this wildcat strike in the New York prison system. The strike, which began February 17th, had paralyzed the operations of dozens of correctional facilities. The announcement came as state officials said thousands of New York National Guard troops will continue to be deployed in the facilities to augment security and operations as an aggressive campaign to hire new officers are launched. Thousands of other striking correction officers met Monday's state-imposed deadline to return to work or face termination and the loss of their health care coverage. The return of those roughly 5,000 officers put the state's correctional workforce at about 10,000, which includes sergeants, but is still a few thousand short of staffing levels in place before the strike began on February 17th. Tesla protests spread nationwide and worldwide as Elon Musk continues to wreak havoc through Dodge. People are taken to Tesla dealership. There are a sample of messages that target Elon Musk over the weekend as thousands of protesters across the country and around the world have flooded local Tesla dealerships to express their outrage over the tech CEO's escalating war on the federal government. Musk Tesla facilities U.S. face takedown protests. Tesla facilities across the U.S. are facing protests and vandalism in response to the political role Elon Musk, who owns the car manufacturers, played in the Trump's administration. There has also been a spike in Cybertruck vandalism across the U.S. and worldwide, and some car owners are defacing and turning in their Teslas in protest of Musk. The protests illustrate a growing unease over Musk's influence on the U.S. government since President Donald Trump allowed him to create the cost-cutting task force, Department of Government Efficiency, called Dodge. So far, Dodge has fired or offered buyouts to about 100,000 federal employees and gained access to sensitive personnel and financial information of millions of Americans. Critics have resorted to calling the tech billionaire President Musk, arguing that he has too much power in the White House. Some at the protests in Burbank held signs that said, "Deport Elon and boycott swastika cars," with protesters attempting to connect the car to fascism. Singer Cheryl Cole donated her Tesla to a national public radio last month. She posted a video to Instagram waving goodbye to the car as it was towed away. "There comes a time when you have to decide who you are willing to align with. So long, Tesla," Ms. Cole said. Trump calls for a mandatory death penalty for those convicted of killing officers. During his speech, President Donald Trump honored the widow of slain New York Police officer Jonathan Diller, vowing to strengthen protection for law enforcement officials. Trump called for a mandatory death penalty for anyone convicted of killing a law enforcement officer during the speech to Congress on March 4th. Trump announced he signed an executive order that would make the death penalty mandatory in such cases. During his speech, he asked lawmakers to make it permanent, make it a permanent law. Trump also pushed for a new crime bill that would increase penalties for repeat offenders and expand protections for law enforcement officers. And last month has been what we call Black History Month. And here's one of my favorite Black History stories. Remembering George Stinney, Jr., he's 79 years later. George Stinney was the youngest person to be legally executed in the United States at age 14. After being wrongfully convicted of murdering two white girls, he was fatally executed in South Carolina in 1944. After 80 days in confinement and only one day in trial with an all-white jury, he was executed. On April 24th, George was sent to trial where neither his parents nor any members of the Black community were allowed inside the courtroom. His court-appointed lawyer was a tax attorney who failed to call even one witness to the stand. After an all-white jury spent 10 minutes in deliberations, they convicted him of both rape and murder, and he was sentenced to die. Mobs of white people who tried to lynch George earlier chased his family out of town, so the family never once saw him again before his conviction, his execution. He was sent to the murder chamber alone with no one he knew present. Because it was only 90 pounds and his body was so small, the executioner placed a Bible under him to successfully complete the murder. They placed a metal bowl over his head and covered his eyes with a leather mark strap, which continuously fell during the execution and revealed his big, wet eyes to the audience. George Stinney was an innocent boy who was murdered 79 years ago because he was Black. 70 years later, in 2014, he was exonerated posthumously because he was not given a fair trial. I hope we never tire of learning about injustice as this. George Stinney went to trial one day. The jury stayed out 10 minutes, and 90 days later, he was executed. He didn't have an appeal. There was no appeal. And they executed a 14-year-old boy in South Carolina. And just last week, South Carolina reinstated the firing squad and executed another person on death row last week through a firing squad. So George Stinney is my favorite Black history story of a 14-year-old guy, the youngest person ever executed in America. Rest in peace, George Stinney. Now we get to what we call Crossroads. And I got two guys here who will knock you off your feet. Everywhere I go in this city, I see one or both of them. I don't care what time of night it is, what time of day it is. When somebody called and said, we got a problem, these gentlemen, Ron Hampton and Tyrone Parker, are warriors of the First Order. Ron Hampton is a former executive director of the National Black Police Association, and Tyrone Parker, former director of the Alliance of Concerned Men. Our topic this morning is two Metropolitan Police Department officers were convicted and sentenced for the 2020 murder of Kyron Hilton Brown and the subsequent cover-up. As a result of that, President Trump in January pardoned these two convicted, sentenced police officers who were tried and convicted for killing this 20-year-old kid. Then in the cover-up, they were hiding the information, the evidence, and et cetera, and yet they were convicted, and the President Trump pardon these two gentlemen, even though after they were convicted, they rode over his moped. He was riding a moped up in the Brightwood area of Washington, D.C. And the law was you weren't supposed to chase mopeds in D.C. streets, but yet they chased him through the streets and through the alley. And when they ran over him, they racked back up over my man. I mean, then they tried to hide what they did and they filed a false report. And the President still pardoned these two cops. And Ron Hampton is a former Metropolitan Police officer who I've been knowing for 45 years. No, he never locked me up. I'm just thank God he didn't, because everybody else locked me up. I don't know how you missed me, Ron, because I was cutting up back in them days. Good morning, Ron Hampton.
Good morning, Roach. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. And good morning, Tyrone Parker.
Good morning, Roach Brown.
He's on the phone calling. Are you there, Ty? They're working out. He'll join us as soon as we get it straightened out. Okay, Ron, we'll start off. This program today, was initiated by Ron Hampton. He called and said, man, we need to do something about this. And I'm making this offer to everybody who's listening. You can call Mertine, Nikichi, or I and suggest a topic. And we'll look at it and see if we can fit it into the schedule. If we will, we'll do it. So we're open to suggestions for topics that we haven't covered. So if you're interested in having a topic that you feel is relevant and germane that we need to address, please do. I'm going to throw the mic to Ron Hampton, the former executive director of the National Black Police Association. This is unusual for a former cop to come on the air to talk about cops currently on the force and why they shouldn't be there. Good morning, Ron, and you got it.
Good morning, Rose. Look, when I heard about all of that, you know, that man can do whatever he wants to do, that he has proven that, and he does it every single day, it seemed like. Something negative to our community. But to me, to pardon him was such a slap in the face to not only the family, but to the residents of District of Columbia. One of the things that I had the honor and pleasure of serving on the DC Police Reform Commission with people like Patrice Sultan and couple of pastors and other representatives of our criminal justice system, Christy Lopez and Robert Bob, were co-chairs of the DC Police Reform Commission. And we talked about these issues. And so this here was a slap in the face to the family and then plus to the residents of the District of Columbia. And then to me, the ultimate affront is that they're going to be back on the police force working in our city. I just don't understand that. You know, they, even if they were pardoned for the criminal issues around the criminal issues, to allow them to come back and work after they violated administrative policies and practices within the police department. Some of those policies around not chase go back to my time. We wasn't chasing people in the cars, and for them to not only chase him, but to run over him and the kind of things that were going on up there. There was a lot of rumors around how the police in the 4th District was policing in that area around Kennedy Street. And, you know, it wasn't the kind of police work that the community wanted. They wanted it to be a little more a recognition of the kind of things that was going on up there. So it just bothered me. So that was one of the reasons that I reached out to you, because I know your program talks about these kind of issues, and I think our community is to being a part of the conversation, because nobody asked us how I feel. I live in Petworth, which is adjacent to Brightwood and Kennedy Street, and nobody asked us how we felt about it. And finally having served on the police department, I was there for almost 24 years. I wouldn't want to work with those guys, and that would be how I would show my disdain for it.
You said something, Rhonda, that they ran over him. What do you mean they ran over him in the police car and he was on a moped?
No, I don't mean they ran over him. They was chasing him, and then I think he hit a car or a car hit him. I'm not familiar with all of the details, so that part of it is just cloudy for me, because I don't remember all of the details in reference to it, but I know he hit a car from the chase that was being conducted. And I think he died from his injuries after he hit a car. But I know
a car hit him because he was being chased by the police, and it was in an alley. But then the police had the car that hit him leave. And so not really a report was even taken with respect to that. And then the police car went and ran over him or tried to cover up the evidence with the debris. I mean, it was just absolutely... I can't even, words cannot even express what they did. And even more so, what Trump did was he didn't just commute their sentences. He pardon them. And that goes against all of the tradition of DOJ, that you don't just get a pardon automatically. You know, you have, there's like a waiting period, like a 5-year period. You have to submit all these documents and this and that. Kimber Smith just got a pardon after being out for decades. You know what I mean? But he automatically pardoned them, which means they could automatically own a firearm, have all the civil rights restored. It's a slap in the face, not only to D.C. residents, but it's a slap in the face of all of the people formerly incarcerated people who have been in prison and just don't get those kind of breaks. It's just a slap in the face all the way around.
You know, one of the concerns I have with this situation is that even after the guy was killed, they lied and falsified police reports. And those documents show that they had a dubious attitude how they wanted to prevent or clean up what they did or didn't do correctly in the process of chasing this kid. And to get a pardon, the pardon means you've forgiven him for that crime, so that's off your record. These guys commit a murder, and they try to hide it and cover it up.
That's right. He
gave him a pardon. And in fact, we spoke to the mother the other day, and I was asking her what was her goal or objective in keeping this issue alive. I know she's hurt, she's traumatized, and tears when I was talking to the mother. She wasn't going to join us, but she's still too traumatized, man. You know, and the bottom line is that we got to make sure that we keep these kind of cases in front of folk.
And, that's right. And look, Rose, the cover-up stuff isn't new. If we go all the way back to Rodney King, if we even go back to the more recent one, George Floyd, there's always the intentional cover-up of the actions on the part of these people in police work. The report that they write, because they have to write a report when all of this stuff go down, the report is never on an honest reflective of the incident that happened. It always is the cover-up, because to me, that means that they know exactly what it is that they're doing. They know that it's also against the policy and practices of the departments they work in, but they don't care. So they intentionally go about the business of covering up those actions. And that's what those police officers did. Plus,
is Tyrone on the line yet? Is he able to get through? Okay, he's still trying to get through. This is a situation that's happening all over the country. You mentioned something, Keech, I forgot about. I was in and I was trying to get a commutation, not a pardon, a commutation. And they said you had to wait 5 years and be denied on your first 5 years. Then they were reconsidered. And you had to submit a ton of documentation, information, et cetera.
Right.
They even went back to one of my elementary school teachers. I'm in my 30s, and they go back to my elementary school teacher to get an assessment of what kind of student I was back then for my adult offense.
Right.
So they go back for information. And this morning, yesterday we just heard that Trump just fired the pardon attorney. The pardon attorney was just fired yesterday, and our good friend Alice Marie Johnson has been appointed the pardon czar. I never heard of that before. So now she has a direct link to the president. She did 22 years in prison, was on our show twice before she received her executive clemency, and then she just got a pardon to finalize her legality. In this kind of situation where people are being pardoned irregardless of the offense, if you can get to somebody who had power, influence, you can get out of prison. We all know this. This stuff that's going on right now, everybody get mad about what Trump doing and they ain't playing fair. They ain't never played fair with us.
No, that's exactly right.
Never played fair with us. And when things get rough, we get tough. When they get rough, we as a people get tough and we'll find a way. And I like to say this, that Trump is doing us a favor. He gonna make us get together in spite of what he say or don't say. If this don't bring us together, I don't know what else will, y'all. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah. No, what I was gonna say, but even in the situation in Memphis, where the five police officers that was involved in beating the brother,
so
the cover up was involved in that, and the way that they uncovered it was that one of the brothers that was involved in it walked away, was standing by a lamppost or something like that, that had a recording device on it, and had they had their camera, but he began to plot while he was standing there how this happened, which was totally a lie to what had really happened. So the cover up is a part of these things, and for these people who take an oath and they're sworn in to protect the public in the way that they should be protected, to go off and do it, they're not entitled to a pardon. They're not entitled to these jobs again that rely on the whole issue of trust and confidence. It's appalling, and again, it's an affront to the people whose families that these people belong to, as well as the citizens of the cities that they work in.
You know, it's a shame, Ron, that there's 19 states that refused to allow certain police officers to testify in court because their credibility has been challenged. So now if you got 19 states, they got 19 police departments who got police officers who have been restricted not to go to court to testify because they've been proven that they're not being being truthful and honest, why would they still remain on the force? If you can't be truthful and you take an oath, and I'm gonna throw this out, I know you must catch a lot of flack, Ron. You're a former police officer, and you stand on top of the case, man, and you press them. What kind of flack are you getting for taking stands on issues like this and bringing this to the public's attention?
Well, you know something, Rose, that is true. I do get it, and sometimes people will, most of the time, let me say it this way. Most of the time, they don't say nothing to me because they don't want to have them do it, and that's fine with me. If they do say something to me, then I'm going to respond in the kind of way that I've been responding. But I just came up, and my parents believed in being straightforward and honest. And if you have a job, then you need to do that kind of job. And having served on the police department in this city, and I was very proud to be a police officer here in Washington, D.C., and proud to be a member of the Metropolitan Police Department, then I owe that not only to the people who gave me the job at that time in the police department, but I most of all, I owed it to the citizens of the District of Columbia, and I just think you had to do the right thing. So I continue to do that. I'm not worried about the retaliation or the comments and those kind of things. I can live with that. And as long as they don't put their hands on me, I'm all right. They can talk about me.
Well, there you go. No, they don't put their hands on you.
All right. Yeah. But other than that, it's going to be, I think Martin talked about, it's not where you are in times of comfort. It's where you are in those rough times. And I know I'm not quoting them verbatim, but I believe that too. And so I'm all right with myself, because ultimately I had to live with myself, and I had to live with people like you all and people in my community. So I'm not someone who's going to get pushed around, and I ain't rolling over, and you can't make me take nothing back either. So I'm not worried about that. But I think we need to, if more people, and there are more guys and ladies like me who were in our organization, continue to be in the organization, and continue to want the quality and dignity that goes along with being a law enforcement officer, to be number one. And that's what's important.
You know, Nikichi, legally, even though you got a pardon for these offenses, there's nothing we can do, they can do, or the family can do. But I read the charge violation of the civil rights, taking this case to court for a violation of the gentleman's civil rights.
Well,
is that a possibility, even after they received a pardon?
Out here, I know that the FBI and DOJ did in fact investigate this. I don't know whether it was under the civil rights statute or what, but I know that it was taken out of the police, Metropolitan Police Department, and it was investigated by DOJ. Do you know the specifics of that, Ron? Was that already done?
No, I don't know if that was done or not.
How did it get to the DOJ? I mean, I'm just curious, you know.
No, I don't know if that was part of the process or not. I know as you stated, sometimes that does happen. They will step in automatically and do the violation of the civil rights, and that's included. And then that takes it to a federal level. If it's a state crime, then it takes it to a federal level, like it did in Memphis. Then that moved up from state to a federal crime, and then additional charges are added on as a result of that. But I don't know I don't know what this was. Here, I know that there was a great deal of investigation going on, and even in the investigation, there were the department. There was concerns about whether or not the investigation was going to be thorough and comprehensive enough for what it was that had happened because of the cover up and the things that would happen. I mean, his supervisor was a lieutenant who was involved in all of this. So it wasn't just something that took place at the officer level, but something right. that was up in the management part of it, you know. So you really had to be careful. But that's, you know, having been a police officer, that's not unusual. I mean, if officers are covering up, then supervisors tend to be a part of that process too. And it's not something that is isolated. Sometimes that happens quite a bit.
You know,
I know, Roach, you were talking about the officers being prohibited from testifying. I always remember, Ron, I know that the term they used was testifying. They were not
testifying. There you go.
That's what they were doing. You know, so we need to expose all of that whenever and wherever.
That's true.
We need to point out the inconsistencies and the differences between the way certain people are treated and certain other people are treated. I think, Roach, I think that's the way we're going to be able to get our people together.
But some of that has, a lot of that now in this Justice Department has been put on hold. They have deleted the database that cataloged those individuals in police departments that were in that list, the people who were habitual violators of it. And then those 19 states, all of that came about through the results of the George Floyd situation and some of the reforms that were enacted after that. And there are the Justice Department and some of the red states are now rolling some of those things back when those were critical to the accountability issue. It's just not, it should be something that the individual police department should want, but it also goes to the issue of accountability. These people don't work for themselves. They work for the residents and the citizens of the cities and states that they live in. And now, again, that's just a slap in their face to not even have that. And that's important.
You know, for listeners who are listening and want to call in and join this discussion, the phone number is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We're talking to Ron Hampton, a good friend. He's a former executive director of the National Black Police Association and our co-host, none other than the distinguished attorney, Nikishi Taifa. And we're still having difficulty in getting Tyrone Parkinson, who's participating. I spoke with Tyrone's mother yesterday, and she said there was some misinformation when Trump made the statement that when the cops ran over over Kyron Hilton, that he was an illegal immigrant. He was born and raised here in America. He was an American citizen. And this prompted Trump to say, well, we're going to pardon him because there was a legal immigrant involved. You know, regardless of what the facts, he did the same thing about the Central Park Five. At the top of the show, he recommended that they get that be executed. At the top of the show, we mentioned he's talking about executing, making it mandatory for people killing police. Yeah. Man. This is unbelievable what we're going through and experiencing. And we had police officers who are liars, who test the lie, then they make you put your hand on the Bible and swear to tell the truth. They tell us to tell the truth. They lie. Then when we do what they do, we get locked up and penalized and go thrown into jail. This kind of double standard jiggy boogie is unfair and unjust, and it's impacting us in ways that's affecting our kids, man, and the next 2-3 generations that's coming along. And they believe that the cops aren't no good. You a cop, Ron. You and I have been friends over 45 years, man. And I don't be friends with police, but I was friends with you. And, man, you still buddies.
No, you're
right. It ain't about
right.
the uniform. It's about the human being. When that's you got exactly the right stuff inside, you're all right.
That's exactly right. And I think that's what's important. And then, if anything, we should be held to a high standard, not a less of a standard, but to a high standard. And those are, to me, those are the that's the protocol that should exist. But see, when we have the kind of people who are running the country now, when we have the kind of people who are getting into the criminal justice system that's related to the policies and practices and the manifestation of those policies and practices in our community, then that's what we have to be particularly vigilant about. Because, see, these people want to be able to somehow or another pardon individuals who would storm the Capitol and do the things that they did to people and police officers there. But then in our community, they want to somehow or another now talk about those same things and turn the police over on us. And somehow, and also as they do away with the guardrails around what it is that these people in law enforcement can do, they should be held to a high standard and to the rule of law. The rule of law, and I say that again, because they cannot be running roughshod through our community doing the kind of things that the Attorney General and the rest of them are going to stand back and watch and not say anything about it. And so that leaves it up to us. We need to say something about it and not allow that to happen. And
you know, Ronnie Keechee, when you get a presidential pardon on that particular case, there's nothing you can do with that case. You can't bring it back up. You can't relitigate it. You can't reopen it. What legal recourse does the mother or the family have after this situation when President Trump pardoned them and they got documentation, they deleted evidence, ran over the man, tried to hide and that kind of stuff? What can we do? Or what legality or what legal avenues can the family explore after these two cops received the pardon?
Honestly, Roach, I don't know of any legal avenues unless you want to go to the international sphere, and they don't respect international law either. I think we need to do what you're doing right here now, what WPFW does: agitate, educate, organize. I think that's what we need to do. is, and we need to continue to expose these lies.
Yes, and we need to stimulize, agitate, organize, and stimulize.
Is there or may there be some cost to speaking out and speaking up? Yeah, but there's definitely a cost if we don't do it, Roach. I just can't imagine just standing around not doing these things. That's why. Why I respect you and the work that you and Tyrone and all the rest of us have been doing in this city, because we haven't rolled over, and I'm not rolling over. We need to stand up and call it like it is and do what it is that we need to do. They can't send all of us away. They may send one or two of us away, but they can't send all of us away. I'm not going back. I'm finished.
After Martine does station ID, I just want to make a point.
Yes, this is WPFW-FM, your station for jazz and justice, 89.3 FM, the station where you will hear the truth, whether you want to or not.
Oh, I love you for that, wifey.
I love that too. Hear the truth, whether you want to or not. So one of the things I wanted to say is that, you know, there was a reason why Karan, the victim in this case, why he didn't stop when the police said stop when he was on his moped. There was a reason, okay? And the reason was exactly what happened. If he had, he probably would have been murdered
anyway,
earlier than what he actually was. I mean, what do we tell our young Black boys, our young Black girls? You know,
that's an issue.
You know, what do you do?
You know, that's the issue we deal with all the time. And when most of these situations, like the case in Tennessee with the five police officers beat the gentleman up brutally, and they asked, he kept asking, what did I do? You got Black folk who are afraid. The police tell you, come in, you break out running automatically, because it's either that or you feel they're going to get killed, arrested. If you don't get killed, you're going to get thrown into jail for a charge you didn't do. They break out running. And I grew up like that. When the cops came, I hauled tail out of there. And folks are afraid, man, of the police. Right now, I'm 80 years old. And when I get get in my car and I look in the rearview mirror, see them lights flashing. I get the shakes. I start trembling. I start searching my pockets and say, "Oh, I hope I ain't got nothing on."
What could you possibly have in your pocket, Roach?
I don't have nothing, but probably some cigarettes. And I don't have permission to have them. No, right. They'll find some reason to say you didn't buy these at the right store before 5 o'clock. If you didn't buy your cigarettes before 5 o'clock, that's 5 years.
That's right. That's right.
It's the kind
that's
of exactly. Jiggy booger. They can come up with crimes on the spot up. And we know they don't play fair.
And this ain't right. That's one of the things that was going on Kennedy Street during this time. There were some legitimate issues that the people, the residents in that area, wanted law enforcement to be there. I don't derate that. And there were legitimate issues. But the other thing was is that there was a way to be there and protect the citizens as well as to address the issues. And to some extent, there was some over-policing going on over there. There were other things, intimidation and those kind of things that was going on over there too. And so when you start talking about how you address public safety issues, it has to be a partnership, I believe, between the community, the agencies, and then the people, the business people in that area, because that's a business area, that strip in there. But the people who frequent the area should not have to be afraid of the police. They ought to be able to work and participate in that community there, doing the things that they want to do. And see, the police had a bad reputation there because there were meetings at the 4th District to address some of those intimidations and things of the young people, because they had a very different perspective of what was happening down there than the police. And so, you know, that was some of the stuff that Karan and them was also making complaints. They had complaints on them in reference to some of those things. So they were right to be suspect when it came to some of the police behavior down there.
So let me just say, I know we're trying to get Tyrone Parker on, but let me just lift up his book for a moment, if I may.
There you go. He finally got it.
The message of the mission. Go on, Roach.
He's coming on.
Thank you.
I had you coming, brother.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, go ahead, Ty.
I've had my share of challenges getting up, but it's extraordinary just to be here right now. This is a miracle. Seeing Nikeechi, Mateen, Ron Hampton, and Roach Brown on this extraordinary show. And you know what? And I have not had a lot of time to listen to it, but one of the most interesting things that I'm hearing is, you know, even the U.S. attorney that have been appointed to the district is now hell-bent on working with the police totally. And, you know, that's not even to say about the mayor, and that's not even to say about the police chief. But now we have everything almost against us in the regards of, you know, community. So the thing that we can continue to do is fight for the greater good of the people. That's the whole spirit that we've been.
As I said at the top of the show, Ron Hampton and Tyrone Parker, we've been doing this work since the 70s. That's almost 50 years. We're still going through the same things over and over, and it's getting worse. Well, you mentioned the U.S. attorney supporting the police department, even when they know they're doing there's a rumor going around through Congress that one or two of the Congress members are talking about asking Trump to pardon Derek Chauvin, who killed George Floyd.
Oh, Lord, if you think it was rising in this country before,
if they pardon that guy, Derek Chauvin, or let him out. Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, what this does, though, it's not just the actual action of the pardon. It's also all of the showmanship that goes on around it. And it speaks to the issue that, number one, that they can do any and everything that they want to do. It also says it just thumbs that, man, I'm gonna say it's just hard for me to find the words to describe the frustration with all of this. And they know exactly what it is that they're doing. We talk about the rule of law, and that's in some ways that's what we're doing, is talking about it. But the fact of the matter is that they thumb their nose at the rule of law. But then if one of us do something, they want to lock us up. I mean, they want I saw something the other day, Rose. They gave a guy 170 some years. How are you going to live 170 some years in jail when the average person don't live no more than maybe 60 or 62 or 63 years? Come on now. That don't even make sense. And that can't be justice, because 167 years is not justice. What does that do? And so it sort of adds.
It's not justice,
again,
it's just us.
Yes. That's exactly right. That's exactly
as it's always been, you know, just us. But as we look at that, this is the first time, one of the first times that it's been carte blanche. They got everything against us. The U.S. attorney, the chief of police, the mayor won't say a thing in the contents of the budget and the financial and the possibility of the feds taking over. So at this point in there, the community don't have a choice but to come together and be able to protest and march and show who we really are. These are the times for this here, because it's just terrible.
That's right.
But where are the voices? I mean, it feels like everybody's just silent. Everybody's just accepting this crap. I mean, we grew up like this, Black people in America. I'm 71. We grew up with this. This is not new to us. But what are we going to do? I feel like we're just taking this crap.
Wait a minute, what is going on? I didn't know
you were
71. I didn't. We've been married this long. Are you 71? You didn't tell me that.
It just seems like, right, you gotta stop that. We are meeting and we're looking at how next steps look. Yeah. We are coming together, but we have just not taken the next step. And in the midst of not taking the next step, Trump never's doing what the hell they want to do.
We grew up
in a time, Ty and Ron, that if somebody come and try to take your jacket, you stop him. Then if he takes your jacket, then tomorrow he come take your shoes. The next day gonna take your money. If you don't stop this rascal, he gonna take everything you got. And
that's exactly
we learn that from the street. Huh?
See, it's all right. It reminds me of the situation on the highway when the deer runs out in front of the car and how he freezes. And that's what has happened is that it seems as though our people are frozen like the deer with the lights and the
caught in the headlights.
Yeah, the headlights kind of thing. And it takes them a minute to digest what it is that's really happening, because see, it's happening to them and they're surprised, because in the past, some of those efforts has been small and menial, but it hasn't been in the kind of gigantic way that this man here has taken. I mean, they're going after everything. And this ain't no pension stuff. This is going after every single thing. So people are sort of hesitating about, is this really real? Yes, it is real. Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Obama administration, the Biden administration, they were tiptoeing. Trump has just gone full throttle.
Thank you.
It's unfathomable, you know, just witnessing what's going on.
That's exactly right.
Short period of time.
You know what's amazing? All of us grew up when we were segregated.
This thing is terrible. But thank God that the people had the power, and we're the ones that have the will. We're the ones that got to get on the streets, being able to do what need to be done to turn this ocean line around. And I'm not just saying, I know I've been in a number of meetings and the same subject is on the table. What we gonna do, how do we come out of our silos and begin to unify, and how does that look? And I think that's what we're in the process of coming out of our own silos and looking at regardless of what priorities are, we're gonna take the three most important priorities and go after them. But when this wave comes down on this country here, it's going to be a total transformational change.
You know, it's amazing. They tell us, don't believe what you hear. Don't believe what you say. Just believe what I tell you, what I ain't going to do. And we're being punished for this. We got a few minutes left. What can our listeners do? What words would you give to our folks who are listening? Because this is all three of us came through segregation. This is like we're going way back before segregation. The things they're doing was happening when we was in segregation, man. You ain't got no rights to do nothing. And they can beat you, kill you, and let the people who kill you out. And you don't get punished.
What we had to do, What we had to do, Roach, is what we're doing right now. We got to educate. We got to speak out on it. We got to utilize the tools we have and the things that we have. You're good at what you do. You're on the radio. You had the access. You got a partner there who makes sure that everything is taken care of in terms of the communication.
Thank you, partner.
And look, Tyrone is doing what he's doing. I've been in meetings with Tyrone. They're doing the kind of things. The call has gone out and people are doing things. We're working with young people, a young Kamone Freeman. They're doing some stuff. So it's happening. It's coming together. And I think we have to have the confidence that we'll have it all together at the right time. Because we have been, like Nikisha said, we've been taken by surprise because they took the guardrails off and just came full throttle in terms of what's going on. So that's going to kind of catch you off guard sometimes. But it don't mean that we don't have the resources to fight back, because we're not going back. We can't go back.
I would suggest that in 85 or 95, Farrakhan had the Million Man March. A million black people came to Washington, D.C.
You could do that.
And did nobody get arrested? Was nobody assaulted? Did nobody go to jail? He had a million brothers. And there was quite a few sisters who came to say, hey, regards it is for men. I want to be a part of this. So we had a million folks. We need to take to the streets in millions. I mean, if somebody beating your sister, your brother, taking your money, throwing you down the steps, won't let you out the house, and you say, man, how you doing? I ain't saying how you doing. Nothing.
That's right.
You got to do something. What Trump is doing now is forcing us to get together. He's doing us a favor in reverse. Yes. Pain, suffering, and all this illegal, unjust, unfair treatment that we're receiving, if that don't make us get together, I don't care what part of town you're in, whether you're from the right or from the left, or you're gay or you're straight. It doesn't matter. We all are suffering. We all are hurting. Let's come together to try to relieve some of this pain and suffering. And the only way we can do it is like with guys like you and Tyrone. I am honored to even have still been in your presence, like over since the 70s, over 50 years. People, do you realize these two guys have been working over 50 years and they don't get paid? We don't get paid a dime. But anytime somebody call with an injustice or something that ain't fair and ain't right, I can call Ron Hampton, I can call Tyrone Parker and Yango Sawyer. And I don't care what happens, they'll find a way to get there. And Tyrone be coming and he's retired and sick. I said, man, what you doing here at the meeting? I got to be here, man.
That's right.
So this is the kind of commitment and drive that we need. And for folks who are listening, please get off the couch, get off the chair, do something. I don't care what it is. Do something. Go to a meeting. Get every church in this town and all across the country. Churches should have a meeting every damn night. Open up the churches. Bring people in. You got old folks, man, in medicine. They can't afford to eat. You got a choice between buying the medicine or paying for the food. These are our seniors, man. You think we're hurting. Talk to some of the seniors in medicine, $600-$800, and you get $500 in Social Security. What do you think, a Houdini? You got to make you're a magician. You can take $500 and stretch it to $1,000. Man, please.
People. And look, Roach, they're getting ready to hit our city with this so-called They're treating the city like it's a federal agency. We saw some conversation about them wanting to cut $1 million out of the budget or the money to come to the district. That is going to cost.
And this is our money. This is our tax money. Yeah. Okay?
That's exactly right.
This ain't entitlement or whatever.
So who do we have that's in the front line doing this? Who do we have that's mobilizing and organizing, trying to get us all together? Is there anybody?
There's a whole lot of people. There are a lot of people.
You got Cruz that's putting together a meeting for it. You got Ron Hampton in regards to Dr. Dan. You got Nikisha. We got a lot of people.
And you got Kamal Ali and Kenny Barnes. Yeah. Let's all get together.
Right.
There's several groups that's trying to organize. And dig this. They're doing this in cities all over the country, not just here. So we need to connect and network with these other cities. If we have a million people in Washington, D.C., I bet you we can break a chain. I'm tired of this, man. I mean, how long? It's like we've been swimming the Atlantic Ocean and into the shore and then turn around and swim to the Pacific Ocean. I can't work in the baby pool. I mean, man, you got to keep on swimming and you can't swim. And the waves are getting bigger, the water is getting deeper and colder. And they tell us, hold on. Hold on to what when your hands handcuffed behind your back? How can you hold on when you're tied down?
We got many leaders. All of us have to be leaders. Everybody has the responsibility to do something. If you don't know how to lead, get behind someone who is leading. But there are no excuses. We don't have time for that.
Give us some. We got a few minutes. Give us some closing comments. We'll start with you, Todd, then go to Ron and Akichi.
Well, you know, these times are just so challenging in the contents of what we got to do. But the one thing that we know that God is still in control and that we're going to do everything possible to unify. We're going to, that's right, Roach. Okay. The spirit.
I'm sorry.
I got to turn like Nikichi then. Two things are happening. Over at Union Temple Church, I'm doing a book signing with Reverend Willie Wilson. And this was the beginning of the transformation of my life. In the contents of me not going to jail and finding the spiritual aspect of God and purpose and reason. And we're going to be over there Sunday, this Sunday here at 1 o'clock to be able to sit down with Reverend Wilson. And he's going to talk with me about the transformation of my life that gave me God, purpose, and reason to be able to have the commitment that's going on there.
Okay.
So let's turn it on that.
Go ahead, Ron. You got it. Okay, Ron.
Yeah, I know. I'm working with any and everybody who want to push back, who want to resist. And there are people who are involved in that process. I'm working with you all. Tyrone, I will come by there on Sunday because it's important that we support one another. And I know that God is on our side. Believe me, I know that. It's evident because we wouldn't be in this situation and he wouldn't leave us here and then not.
That's right.
Work
that's
with right. us on it. So I know that that's going to happen. So
go ahead, Nikichi.
I love y'all.
Go ahead, Nikichi.
I just want to say Joni Eisenberg just sent me a text saying they cutting $1 billion out the D.C. budget, not $1 million, $1 billion.
Right.
So, I'm just saying the joogie boogie is on, Roach, and we need to do what? We need to agitate. We need to educate. We need to organize. Back to you.
Thank you. This has been an interesting show. And I just want to say that they're talking about, Trump talking about taking over D.C. or bringing back the control board. And he can do it. The mayor's solid. I understand the situation that she's in because this man is off the chain. He'll do whatever he wants. If you disagree with him, you're in trouble. So we need to get our folk together to organize and mobilize and strategy. And seconding. My greatest disappointment, your greatest disappointment is a blessing in disguise. What Trump is doing now is a blessing to us. We used to have it rough and tough, and we all found a way to survive. But this kind of roughness and political toughness, we got to mobilize and make sure that we can neutralize some of this stuff. Because right now, we all are being hurt. Our grandkids, great-grandkids will feel the effects of what's going on now. People, get off the couch. Do something. Write a letter. Write a postcard. Go to the senior citizen building. Help them. They are hurting. Help these young kids stand on the corner, man. They ain't got nobody to talk to. These are our people. And we all are hurting. And one good thing about this now with Trump, even the white folks are hurting. He'll find thousands of white folk. So now they're feeling the pain that we've been feeling for years. We know about this kind of pain. Now they're beginning to feel it. Say, hey, Trump, you got to stop this jiggy boogie. This ain't right, man.
That's right.
Their attitude. This man is running, these two men, whoever, are running this country with an attitude like, I don't care, F you. We need to have that same kind of attitude.
Thank you. That's right.
And nobody, and I want to say thank you to our two guests, Tyrone Parker, who's supposed to be retired. I ain't never seen a man retire and work 7 days a week. What kind of is this Chinese retirement? So we'll see you Sunday over at Sunday Union Temple for the book signing. It's Sunday, March 16th at 1 o'clock at Union Temple.
12 o'clock.
1 o'clock at 10. Okay, 12 or 1. All right, Ron Daniels, thank you. And Nikichi, as always.
Ron Hampton.
I said Ron Daniels.
I love him.
Ron Daniels, we love you too. We all in this together.
He's on the front line. Ron yes. Hampton, Ron Daniels, and Ron everybody. That's whatever right. your name is. Come on board. We need your help. Ron everybody.
Everybody.
Right, all the Rons.
Yeah. All the Rons.
Okay. Thank y'all you. This crazy. Is Crossroads. I want to thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week. And please, folks, take what these guests said today to heart and do yeah. something to make a thing, a change in somebody's life. Remember, right. your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora is featured at the 21st New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project at AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 14 to the 27th. The festival features 29 films from 19 countries, discussions with filmmakers, and more. The 2025 New African Film Festival features the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa. Tickets and full schedule at afi.com/silver. That's afi.com/silver or at 301-495-6700. That's 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Please join the WPFW family as we celebrate the life of Larry Applebaum, longtime host of The Sound of Surprise. Friends, colleagues, and coworkers will gather to remember Larry and his tremendous contributions to WPFW, the Library of Congress, and the jazz world at large. Music will be provided by DC's own Paul Carr and friends. Sunday, March 23rd, beginning at 2 p.m., at Westminster Presbyterian Church, 400 I Street Southwest, Washington, D.C. For more information, please go to WPFWFM.org.
For close to 50 years, WPFW has amplified the voices, told the stories, and shared the history and culture of Black people throughout the diaspora. In short, we are Black history. Black is WPFW. Texting WPFWFM to 801-801 will help to protect this medium in the Black radical tradition so that we can continue to chronicle Black hope, sorrow, and resistance.
Diversity Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, March 21st. Details and application information are available at www.diversityfund.org. You can send questions to info@diversityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and recordings are accessible online at www.diversecityfund.org. The phone number for further information is 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world one broadcast at a time.
Education, art, health, music, politics, and all things community.
Yes.
Join me, Ambrose Lane.